Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Everybody, we welcome you inside Patriots Playbook for Wednesday, January the 2nd. Happy New Year. No matter where you are, it's a Happy New Year if you're a Patriots fan. My name is John Rook. We welcome you to another edition of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. Please do not be alarmed. Please do not adjust your sets. Please don't bang on the computer and say, hey, the audio is coming in all fuzzy today. It's because I have to go via the telephone today because I'm out on the road with some college basketball duties in Syracuse, New York, of all places tonight. So that's why we bring Patriots Playbook to you from the wintry confines of upstate New York and Syracuse, New York, where it's a balmy 14 degrees with lake effect snow here this afternoon. Don't you wish that we had that in a couple of weeks? Yeah, that's what I thought. But at any rate, we will hold down the fort here for Patriots Playbook today, even though we're out on the road with some college basketball duties this week. And why not? Because it's a great time. It is an absolutely fantastic time to be a Patriots fan. What happened is something that we talked about all season long, and it finally took place. You finally got to Week 16, finally got the win, finally got through to 16-0, and it's kind of like, big collective exhale now. So what's left in store? Now, I know that there are many of you that have thought, you know, back since to like week three, as early as week three maybe, and we talked a little bit about this last week before the holidays hit us, that, you know, that this team was capable of doing what they've done. And now that they've done it, I kind of get the sense of, is that all there is? And I think that's an appropriate way to feel right now, because I think everybody realizes, from the players in the locker room to the coaches to the front office staff to fans who really, really care about the fortunes of this team, I get the sense that everybody feels the same way, that this is not over, that this is not finished, and that as great an accomplishment as 16-0 is in the regular season, for the very first time in the 88-year history of the NFL, and certainly more recently since you go to a 16-game schedule in 1978, as great an accomplishment as this is, it's just not complete unless you win the Super Bowl. And that if this team were to stumble, either in the opening round or in the AFC Championship game or even in the Super Bowl for that matter, that would somehow lessen the accomplishment of 16-0. And quite frankly, I tend to agree. It's a shame that we can't just sort of set the 16-0 apart and let it stand on itself. But I think everybody realizes, you and myself and anybody who covers this team, I think we all realize that it's an incomplete accomplishment, even as great as it is, simply because the ultimate goal for every team in the NFL is to win the Super Bowl. So that is still out there. And that is still something for this team to accomplish. And yes, this team is now 0-0. In the postseason. And I think that's a mantra that you're going to hear pretty solidly over the next week to 10 days before they actually get out on the field and play on the 12th. And that would actually be, 10 days from today when they will play again. So I think it's fine to appreciate the 16-0. I think it's fine to have a little bit of the slice of the record book as it is right now, because quite frankly, I think we all realize that that's exactly what it is. It's just a little slice of the record book. But it's not a complete accomplishment unless the Super Bowl comes along with it. And certainly I'd like your thoughts on that today. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. The other issue that I'd like to throw out to you today for our email question of the day, and by the way, Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us in the second hour of the program today, so we'll definitely get some good bye week talk going on in this state that we're currently in, kind of waiting to see who we're playing coming up, the collective we, of course, who we're going to play coming up in 10 days. But that's really what today's email question today was going to center around. Of the three teams that are possible that the Patriots could play on January the 12th, which again is at Gillette Stadium, of course, 8 p.m. Eastern time. But, you know, and by the way, who's not surprised that they stuck the Patriots in prime time? I'm not. You know, the Patriots have been a veritable television cash cow for the NFL, and I think all of the ratings have certainly proven that to be the case. They've got the two highest-rated programs in primetime television this entire season. They've got the highest-rated cable program of all time. You know, they've got Buffalo numbers, and so if they can stick the Patriots at night where they can drive the ad revenue rates up again and get better numbers, you know that's what they're going to do. So regardless of weather conditions and, you know, announcer capabilities and all that kind of stuff, Patriots get stuck with that nighttime game. But that's what I wanted to ask you about today. Of the three teams that are possible the Patriots could face in the opening round, the AFC semifinals, either Tennessee, Jacksonville, or Pittsburgh. One of those three teams will come to Gillette in 10 days. Which team do you favor and why? Which team do you ultimately think will be the Patriots' opponent? That could be part of the question. And is there another team that you would rather see? Is there a preference that you have between those three teams? And why is that team your preference? So if it's two different teams, who do you think will be there and who would you like to see there? Then that's fine. If you think it's two different teams, then fire that off. Webradio@patriots.com. That's our email question of the day. Who do you think the Patriots will play in 10 days and why do you think they will be there? All right, so stew on that for just a couple of moments and then fire off your email answers to us because we're going via the email inbox here today. A couple of thoughts come to mind, and honestly, you know, as the Patriots have the AFC East Division title again, they've got the first-round playoff bye, they've got home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs, they've won their division now for the fifth straight year, which is going to get buried under all of the 16-0 noise that's been made, but I wanted to point that out because that hasn't happened before. Patriots have earned a first-round bye for the fifth time since the current playoff format was adopted in 1990. The Patriots have previously earned first-round byes in 96, 01, 03, and 04. So it gives you a bit of the history, of course, and Super Bowl years. The Patriots have earned the number one playoff seed for the second time in team history, joining the 2003 team. Of course, I could sit here for the next hour and 45 minutes until we're done and give you nothing but superlatives, and we'd probably run out of time based on the number of records that were set, both franchise-wise and league-wise, because the number of records are staggering. The list that both the Patriots Public Relations Group and the National Football League have basically made available, all the things that the Patriots have accomplished this year. Not only records, but the awards. The list of awards that each of the players and some of the coaches and such have gained throughout the course of the season is staggering. It doesn't really surprise me that, you know, eight Patriots made the Pro Bowl, but, you know, this is one of the things I was going to kind of beat on with Tom Casale before we got going here today. I'm looking at the official final NFL stats this morning, and lo and behold, who is tied for the overall lead in receptions in the entire National Football League this year, and he didn't make the Pro Bowl? That would be one number 83 in your program, fans. Wes Welker, 112 catches. He's tied with T.J. Hujimama for the overall NFL lead in receptions this year.
T.J., who's your mama?
That's exactly right. 112 receptions, right at the top of the list. Nobody in the NFC had more than 100 catches. And you had Welker and Hujimanzada at the top of the AFC with 112. And so, you know, and again, I understand why Braylon Edwards, I will open up this old argument again, especially if you feel one way or the other on it and you'd like to comment on it, certainly can do so by firing off an email. But I would obviously, I'd open it up by saying, look, Maybe Braylon Edwards had, I think he had about 100 more yards receptions, 100 more yards in receptions than Welker did. He doubled him in touchdowns. I think it was 16-8. But Welker also had 32 more catches. 32. That's two per game, if my math is correct. That's significant. 32 more catches than did Braylon Edwards. I'm not saying Braylon Edwards is not Pro Bowl caliber. He is. He deserves it. But I don't know how you can have the number one or tied for number one in the entire NFL receiver in number of catches, not be on a Pro Bowl team, not be voted to the Pro Bowl. Travesty. So there's another one for you anyway. Obviously, Welker came up huge this last week against the Giants in the 38-35 win. By the way, I don't know. You were probably a little like me in this regard watching the game. Did anybody watch the game exclusively on NFL Network this last Saturday night and not watch it on any of the broadcast networks? If you did, I'd be curious to know if you did, number one, which network you watched it on and why. I did happen to watch the game exclusively on NFL Network because I happen to have it with my DirecTV service, and the friends of the family that we ended up watching the game with on Saturday night, they also have a satellite dish, and they've got, you know, the widescreen high def, and who's not going to go watch it in that kind of a situation, right? So we went and did that. And plus, they're, you know, serious fans like I am, so I wouldn't get the incessant questions during the game. We could all sit there and actually watch the game without people yapping. Hey, how come that's happening? How come, what do you think about that? What do you think? You know, we could at least watch the game, which is what I wanted to do. I wanted to watch the game like everybody else. Didn't want to, you know, completely get, you know, nailed on that. But I actually thought, and maybe it's just me, Brian Gumbel's taken a lot of hits. And a lot of criticism for his lack of authoritativeness as a play-by-play announcer. I think that's been the primary criticism against some of his announcing this year. And while he still is very thin of voice, and he still doesn't have, you know, that authoritative type command I think that most people expect from guys who are play-by-play announcers, I actually thought he did a fairly credible job. He called the game smartly, if not simply. I thought Chris Collinsworth did a pretty decent job of analysis. I thought they were fair on both sides. I thought they added just the right amount of incredulity when the Patriots were down, and I thought they heaped the right amount of praise on a Giants team that, by all means, deserves a tremendous amount of credit for the game that they played, the game that they coached, and their game plan going in on Saturday night. I can't say enough about it. Tom Coughlin takes so many hits. A lot of them deserve it. A lot of them deserve. But I thought the fact that the Giants stood up toe-to-toe with the Patriots for almost the entire four quarters, with the exception of what, maybe the last 2 minutes of the game, and exchanged blows with the Patriots, didn't really think twice about leaving the regulars in the game, even though they had a couple of fairly key injuries, I thought, Sean O'Hara being the most obvious one going down during the course of the ball game. They wanted to win the game, and I was really impressed by that. They didn't wuss out like the Colts did against the Titans on Sunday. I thought that was a total and complete wuss job. They didn't wuss out like the Cowboys did against the Redskins, basically handing Washington a playoff spot in the NFC. You want to talk about integrity in the game? I mean, I realized that, you know, Dallas had nothing to play for. Indy had nothing to play for. But neither did the Giants. And I know that the Giants had a challenge, and they wanted to be a part of the record book, and they wanted to be the team that knocked out the Patriots. So they had more incentive than, say, Dallas did and Indianapolis did. I will certainly grant you that. But I was just so impressed with the Giants just not giving up, and the Patriots certainly answering that call and doing the job as they did in an effort to win the game. But when you take the Giants' effort on Saturday night and you compare it to what we saw in key spots around the league on Sunday, and like I said, in the NFC, the Cowboys just handing the Redskins the sixth and final playoff spot, and in the AFC, the Colts just handing that sixth and final spot to the Titans. I was feeling all smarmy. I just thought it was cheesy. Greatly disappointed you know, that Peyton Manning would, you know, throw a series or two and that's it, and that Tony Romo wouldn't play much more than whatever he played. And I was really disappointed in the efforts. I mean, obviously, there's no way that Washington is three touchdowns better than Dallas. And there's no way when you're playing full strength that Tennessee ever beats Indianapolis. I mean, come on. I think you have to realize that, and I think everybody realizes that. So that's why I just, the end of the season games, week 16, week 17, they stink. It's awful. I don't know how the NFL ever really fixes this problem, and I don't even want to go so far as to say it's a problem. But in all honesty, to me, it's something worth discussing until it never happens again. And because it happened again this year, you had two teams clearly with no incentive to move on and play, then you had two teams lie down. And I guess the worst part about that is that because you had two teams lie down, two teams were able to get in playing less than their best and getting less than their best from their opponent. And I didn't think that was right. I didn't think that was necessarily fair to a team like Cleveland. Although Cleveland, you can certainly make an argument, Cleveland had their chances and they blew it the week before when they lost to Cincinnati. I will definitely give you that. But here's Cleveland with a 10-win team sitting at home. Sitting at home. It is what it is. I totally and completely understand that. But the system still isn't quite right, and maybe it never will get quite right. If you have a suggestion, I would love to hear it, because I've been racking my brain over this ever since those Sunday results over the last couple of days, and quite frankly, I don't know how you could fix it. I don't know how you could fix it where you could make every game actually mean something, unless, of course, you just didn't predetermine opponents. I think that's the only way that you could probably fix that. But if you've got a way to kind of, address the situation, I'd love to hear from you today. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address again. And you've got several things you can kind of chew on, and hopefully you'll fire off some emails and we'll exchange some ideas and get into some football discourse today, because, you know, we've got today, we've got tomorrow, and then we've got three shows next week before we actually get to kick it off in the playoffs. So there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, we don't have to look at too many specifics this week because we don't know who the Patriots are going to play. So that's why we open up today by asking you, who do you prefer? Who do you prefer out of Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Pittsburgh? Number one, who would be your choice? If you could hand-pick an opponent for the Patriots, who would it be and why? And if you think the team that's going to be there differs from your hand-picked choice, then tell me that as well, and why. I'll go ahead and give you mine, just for grins and giggles here. See if you agree or disagree. My own thought is, just kind of looking ahead a little bit, I personally believe it will be Jacksonville. I think a lot of people will probably think that it will be Jacksonville. But I'm actually thinking that Pittsburgh will come back for a rematch. I mean, that's how I differ on this thing. I don't know why I would say that, other than the fact that I favor Pittsburgh at home. And even though Jacksonville is certainly eminently capable, and I don't think anybody would be surprised if Jacksonville were to be here in 10 days, just a little birdie tells me that Pittsburgh is going to find a way to gut it out. And I'm not so sure that the loss of Willie Parker really hurts Pittsburgh as much as, you know, a lot of people are saying. Now, Pittsburgh's banged up in a lot of other ways. It'll be interesting to see how they get through this week. There's also part of me that wants to say that Tennessee is going to find a way to upset San Diego, but I just don't know that that happens. In fact, I'll tell you one thing right here and right now. Don't be shocked. Don't be shocked if it's San Diego. If the Patriots are fortunate enough to get by their first game, don't be shocked if it's San Diego that comes here for the AFC Championship. Don't be shocked. How do you think it's going to play out? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, so there you go. You got some things to chew on today, and we'll see if we can kind of move on. Of course, the wild card playoff games this Saturday, we'll have the Jacksonville at Pittsburgh game at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And if Jacksonville wins that game, then obviously we'll wait and see what happens in the later game on Sunday, because the second AFC wild card game will be Sunday, Tennessee at San Diego, and that'll be a 4:30 Eastern time kickoff. So Jacksonville wins, but we wait wait and see if Tennessee can pull the upset. So we won't know until, I'd say probably around 7:30 Sunday night. We'll know who the Patriots will play after that last and fourth and final wild card game is over. The two NFC games are obviously prior to that. The NFC games Saturday will be Washington at Seattle, 4:30 Eastern time kickoff, and then Sunday's game will be the Giants playing at Tampa Bay, 1 o'clock Eastern time. I'd love, personally, to see the Giants actually win that game. I think they certainly can win that game. There's a part of me that would like to say, you know, hey, you know, this would be a reward for playing as valiantly as the Giants did against the Patriots on Saturday, almost pulling it off. But, you know, I realize it is the Giants, and I think we all kind of like wink when we say that. And so you wonder how much they actually have left in the tank after expending quite a bit of their energy on the field at Giants Stadium this last Saturday against the Patriots. I mean, is there anybody that doesn't think that they won't come through? I mean, maybe that's just sort of the cynic in all of us here, but I think that'll be a battle. I still think the Giants have enough to get by, but it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. But Jacksonville at Pittsburgh, Saturday night at 8, and then Tennessee at San Diego, Sunday afternoon at 4:30, and then the lowest seed to get through, whether it's Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, or Tennessee, will be against the Patriots at 8 o'clock Eastern time on January the 12th. A couple of other observations from Saturday night's game. Like you, I'm sure you had a fair amount of angst throughout the course of the game. I thought that the Giants, and I thought Eli Manning, played somewhat surprisingly solid throughout the course of the game. Like you, because we normally nitpick on Tuesdays, and since we didn't have a show on Tuesday because of the New Year's holiday, I would also open up for a little nitpicking here today on Wednesday, and I know that the PFW guys did that prior to our show today. But I would also continue with some of that thought process with you here, only because I don't know how you can give up 35 points in a game and be happy. Entirely, completely, and totally happy. Yes, you won the game. Yes, you're 16-0. Yes, you're perfect. Yes, you've got the bye. Yes, you've got the number one seed. Yes, yes, yes. You've got all these things going on your side. And yet, how many teams really win for the long haul when you give up 35 points? This, of course, is the most points the Patriots have given up all year, and yet they still managed to win the game. So that certainly says something about the Patriots and their penchant for just being able to do enough to win. But I have to tell you, there were some times, especially early in the second half, where we saw Brandon Jacobs get into the Patriots linebacking core and into the secondary that concerned me a little bit. Number one. I think the Patriots also showed that at times, especially over the middle or up the middle, that the secondary can be susceptible to, an accurate passer. And that's why if Jacksonville ends up being the team that comes to Foxborough in 10 days, I think we have some concern as Patriots fans overall, because Jacksonville does exactly, I think, if not better, if they don't do it better, they do exactly what the Giants did. You know, they have a good, strong 1-2 punch in the running game, very physical up front in the trenches. And David Garrard, well, he's not a world beater, but he certainly is accurate. He certainly knows how to find his targets up the middle. He's got big receivers he can throw to. And it seems to me that Jacksonville might not be the best matchup of the three. I think the Patriots actually match up a little bit better with either Tennessee or even Pittsburgh, who, of course, they've already beaten this year. And Jacksonville, I think, you probably read on several of your, favorite websites and the newspapers and probably seen some discussion already in TV and radio, wherever you may be, that Jacksonville is the hot team. Jacksonville is the team that's the sleeper team of the AFC. That's the team that could surprise everybody by not only beating the Patriots, but maybe also beating the Colts and getting to the Super Bowl. That's the team that is the trendy pick in the AFC, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I can't say that that's wrong. I mean, I agree. Again, we're here 10 days away from the game, and we're still, 3 days away or so from, the Jaguars playing. They got to play on Saturday. But, I can't say that that's not a good judgment based on what Jacksonville has done throughout the course of the regular season. I'd have to say that, you know what, that's actually that's a good pick, and it's a sound pick, and I think it's a very believable scenario. So giving up 35 points overall, I mean, you know, kind of leaves me feeling a little uneasy, maybe in that same vein as how the Patriots and how we all felt after the game against Philadelphia, and especially after the game against Baltimore. And by the way, is there anybody else out there who doesn't think that if Baltimore by some chance beat the Patriots, that Brian Billick wouldn't still have his job? I think if the Patriots had lost that game to Baltimore, and even though the Ravens still would have finished 6-10 or thereabouts, I still think Brian Billick probably keeps his job. And now, of course, he's the first coach to get, you know, the hero, the axe, and Baltimore's looking for a new head coach. I'm not necessarily saying that it's a right move or a wrong move. I think it was a little bit of a surprising move, to be honest with you, because he's the one that brought that franchise from where they were to greatness, and had his second year on the job, he took them to a Super Bowl there in 2000. You know, and he was thought as the brilliant offensive mind, which is somewhat ironic because it's offense where Baltimore has been struggling greatly over the last couple of years especially. I think what it boils down to. And believe it or not, I think I'm going to agree with a guy named Greg Easterbrook on this one because I read his Tuesday morning quarterback column, and I think there was some truth to it. Fact is that Billick isn't so much a poor offensive coach as he is a poor evaluator of quarterbacks. See, I think they really thought that Kyle Bowler would be the answer for them. And obviously that was a miserable failure. I think they thought that Steve McNair still had some life left in him. And obviously that's not exactly correct either. Frankly, I think Baltimore might have won an extra game or two had they just given the ball to Troy Smith this year. And kind of lived and died with it. He might still have his job. I don't know if they beat the Patriots. But the coach might still have his job. So, anyway, just as an aside here, I think that, you know, I'm left with largely the same feeling overall now as I think we all had a bit after the Philadelphia and Baltimore games. It's kind of like, ooh, man, that was close. Ooh, we see some weaknesses on this team, and ooh, there's some room for improvement here. And I guess maybe in a sense that's also the scary part because this team managed to get through this season at 16-0 and do something that nobody's ever done before, and yet, wow, they could actually be better. That's the scary part. But here's the other part. I think the Patriots must improve. I think they'll need to improve. I think they'll have to improve. Because if they don't, then a team like Jacksonville can get them. A team like San Diego can get them. And certainly we all know that a team like Indianapolis can get them. So there are three teams that I look at in the AFC right now out of the six that could beat the Patriots. I think the Patriots have it over Pittsburgh. I certainly think they have it over Tennessee. You know, and should the Patriots be favored over everybody? Well, yeah, because they're going to get to play at home. But it doesn't mean that I don't think the Colts couldn't do it. I think they can. I certainly believe that the Jaguars can, based on the physical matchups, as I just explained a couple of minutes ago. And I think San Diego is a far cry from the team that lost to the Patriots 38-14, you know, back in the opening couple of weeks of the season. Even though San Diego has to come out here to play rather than the Patriots go there to play like they did last year. I think San Diego would play with a, you know, proverbial chip on their shoulder as well. So I think, you know, the Chargers could definitely give them a game. There's no doubt about it. You know, if you turn the ball over a little bit, or, you know, you allow LT to get open and run in between the tackles and get into your secondary, then, yeah, it could make for a very uncomfortable day. So I think they can. I think there are three teams that are physically capable, as opposed to the NFC, which I don't think there's any way Green Bay beats New England. I don't think there's any way that any other team in that conference beats New England with the exception of Dallas. I think Dallas may have the physical talent right now that could play with the Patriots. We saw that, you know, back early in the season, and then the Cowboys, of course, turned on the afterburners and ended up beating, or the Patriots ended up turning on the afterburners and beating the Cowboys by 21. But to a physical extent, I think Cowboys can match up somewhat offensively. So I think that's the only team in the NFC that, quite frankly, you know, you should probably be somewhat concerned about at this stage of the game. I think there are more teams that are capable of beating the Patriots, certainly on the AFC side of the coin. All right, we'll take a timeout here, and we'll get into some emails coming up in a moment. Again, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. And again, a couple of topics for discussion today. Number one, who do you think the Patriots will play in 10 days in the AFC semifinal round? Who do you think will ultimately be here and why? And number two, to that end, who do you favor? Is the team that you think will be there and the team you want to be there, are they two different teams? Let me know that. Do you have a nitpick issue about this Patriots team after 16 games and perfection during the regular season? We've been doing a little nitpicking as well. Do you have nitpicks with this team? Do you see problem areas? A couple of the other ideas. And who do you think is going to ultimately win out in the wild card week this week? We can talk about that as well. So all of these items on the agenda. John Rook, we're on the road in Syracuse, but we're with you right here inside the playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook, everybody, for Wednesday, January the 2nd. Again, Happy New Year to everyone, no matter where you may be. I'm John Rook, and again, we're coming to you via the phone today because we've got some college basketball duties tonight in Syracuse. In fact, it's a conference opener, a little St. John's Syracuse action tonight, but we're holding down the fort here in the Cuse and talking a little football with you right now. Webradio at Patriots.com is where you get a hold of us here today. By the way, did notice just a short while ago, the Steelers announced as a potential opponent for the Patriots coming up in 12 days. The Pittsburgh Steelers promoted an offensive lineman, Jonathan Parquet, from their practice squad. They also signed rookie offensive lineman Jason Capizzi for a second time because they've lost starting tackles Marvell Smith and Max Starks to injuries in the last 3 weeks. Starks, by the way, and Clint Craywalt were placed on the injured reserve list, so their seasons are officially over. And with two of their top three tackles out, Steelers are going to play third-teamer Trey Essex at left tackle in their wildcard game this Saturday night against Jacksonville. Or it says here they may shift Pro Bowl guard Alan Faneca to tackle and then start Chris Kimoiatu at left guard. So the Steelers are doing quite a bit of shuffling on their offensive line in an effort to gain some health and perhaps some kind of a physical advantage against a very physical defensive front for Jacksonville. But the thing that Pittsburgh is going for them right now is the fact that it is in Pittsburgh, although that doesn't seem to slow Jacksonville down too much, does it? But anyway, that's the latest from Pittsburgh's camp, is one of three teams that Patriots could potentially face in 12 days. And that's basically what I want to know from you today. Who do you think is actually going to get here? Who's ultimately going to win out after the wild card weekend? Who will be in Foxborough to take on the Patriots? Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us. Let's see if we can catch up with some of the emails from the last couple of days here that we've got left over. Scott in Queensbury, New York says, why wasn't the tackle on Wes Welker called a horse collar tackle? That was at the end of the first quarter. I'm trying to remember the specific play, to be honest with you, Scott. I can only surmise that it wasn't, because he didn't grab a physical part of the collar. That's the only, I mean, it wasn't, a lot of times when guys reach out, you can tell if he's reaching out to do it on purpose. It's kind of like a, you know, like a face mask, you know, and you yank. I mean, sometimes when you grab the face mask and you let it go, it's like a, you know, it's a 5 yard type of thing. And that's the only thing I can guess here is why maybe the official, you know, didn't call it a horse collar particular play. Because we all know that Roy Williams of the Dallas Cowboys makes a particular habit out of horse collar tackles. At any rate, he says, it's great how the Pats haven't let the pressure get to them and to stay focused on the game at hand. I really hope the Pats get number four, perfect 19-0. That, of course, would be the goal, of course, Scott. No doubt about that. Okay, this one comes from Al, who writes from Kuwait. Al, thank you very much for the email. And he says, wow, 16-0. I don't want to wax old school, but I've been following the Patriots since 1966. I attended my first game at Boston College in 1968, a walloping by the Chargers. From 66 to 75, watching the Pats was like watching the 62 Mets every year. Well, I'm sure there are some that would agree with you there, Al. He says, I also saw the last game as the Boston Patriots, which was a blowout by the Vikings at Harvard Stadium the day after a huge blizzard. I only went, as many of us had assumed, that may well have proven to have been the last game by the Patriots franchise as we had always known it. In any case, this whole thing these days is just plain great. I never thought I'd see it. In many ways, this is better than a Super Bowl win. Someone wins the Super Bowl every year. There's never been a 16-0 team until now. We'll definitely have a great week, Al, and you remain safe over there. You know, you bring up a lot of points that I think that are shared by a lot of fans, Al. In no way does anybody here want to diminish the 16-0 feat by this football team. But I think common sense would have to dictate here that it's just not going to be the same if this team loses one of the next three. It won't diminish what they did in the regular season, but in the overall scheme of things, it's not going to mean much because they didn't ultimately finish the job. And so, did you know anything? Here's a perfect example, okay? For those of you, and I know there are a few of you who feel this way, so listen up here. I want you to see if you can't, comprehend what I'm talking about here. before this whole 16-0 run really got started, before we really started talking about it, and before it permeated our everyday lives, especially here inside Patriots.com radio, did you know who the other two teams were in NFL history that finished the regular season undefeated? Did you really know? You knew Miami. Everybody knows Miami in 72, right? Did you know the other two teams? Now answer it honestly. And I'm willing to bet that 9 out of 10 of you did not know. Of course, there was the 1934 and the 1942 Chicago Bears. And there's a very good reason why you did not know. Because they failed to win the NFL championship in those 2 years. And yet you remember Miami. And you remember Miami why? Well, number one, you're probably alive for Miami and not alive for those other two teams. I'll certainly grant you that. But the main reason is because Miami went on to win the Super Bowl. They won a championship. And so you ultimately, time is proven to remember championship teams. Time lasts forever when you win. But when you win and then fail in the ultimate, in the penultimate game, you're an asterisk. You're an afterthought. You're a, oh yeah, remember those guys? That's what you are. And so if the Patriots of 2007 don't win the Super Bowl, they will rank right there with the 34 and 42 Chicago Bears as teams that, well, they got through their regular season undefeated, but they did not win at all. So, you know, are they some of the greatest teams of all time? Well, no. I would argue that, you know, you don't really deserve to be considered one of the greatest teams of all time unless you ultimately win a championship. And to me, that's what this Patriots team is on the verge of doing. It's on the verge of being called itself one of the greatest football teams of all time in the 88-year history of the National Football League. But they only got there if they win them all. I mean, it sounds almost silly. It's kind of like, well, geez, you know, that's sort of discrediting what they've done the previous weeks. Well, no, not really, because I think some of the greatest teams of all time are the greatest teams of all time because they've improved throughout the course of the year. And they improved to the point where they ultimately won it all. I mean, look at the 85 Bears. I mean, could they have been playing any better than how they played at the end of the year when they whacked the Patriots in Super Bowl 20? They're considered one of the greatest teams of all time. 66 Green Bay Packers were the same way. That's why championship teams and teams that get remembered are teams that improve and teams that ultimately win the big one. Teams that get remembered for the long haul are not teams that start off at one level and then end up below that, which is what would happen if the Patriots lose one of these next three. You just can't argue any other way but that. So, yeah, we would look back on it fondly. We'd look back on it with somewhat, you know, some wonderment. Yes, the regular season win streak would still technically be alive. But there would be a huge sense of disappointment if the Patriots ultimately lost. So in order to really validate what the Patriots did in the regular season, you've got to win them all. I think that's the big thing. Okay, here we go. More emails coming in. Mike sends this one. Doesn't say where he's writing from, but that's okay, Mike. I think in the Giants game, that penalty after Randy Moss's first touchdown catch for excessive celebration was completely ridiculous. Initially, it looked like it was on Moss for dancing and then spiking the ball, but also might have been because Maroney moved his legs a little too. I didn't even see that at all, but it wasn't like the Patriots did anything over the top like T.O. or Chad Johnson had done in the past. Do the people that make up these rules even understand the emotion that goes into playing football? That penalty made the Pats kick off so far back it was received close to midfield and probably directly led to the touchdown being run back by New York. After an emotional drive ending with a touchdown tying two records on one play, aren't the guys entitled to jump up and down a little? I can understand them not wanting the entire offense in the end zone doing a 30-second dance that stops the game, but come on, pretty soon spiking the ball and maybe even smiling after a touchdown might cost your team a penalty flag. Yeah, I totally agree with that, Mike. I thought that the official sat right back there, and when he saw, you know, I think, you know, when he saw Moss, you know, do his little jig, I think he was kind of waiting. And then when Maroney and I don't know, I can't even remember who else it was that came up, joined it, he said it was a team thing and you're not allowed to have a team celebration. It looked like he was just waiting to throw the flag. And I think you're right. I think this is where you've got to have some individual discretion on the part of the officials. And I thought it was a little uncalled for, but, I mean, unfortunately, we all know the NFL stands for no fun league. So, at any rate, here he says, on the other hand, what was up with Rodney Harrison towards the end of the game? Looks like he was letting himself lose control. Belichick actually took him out of the game and made him sit because he was allowing himself to lose focus and draw a penalty for running his mouth. I think a guy like him should know better than to do something like that in a close game. That really is something the Pats cannot afford in a close game in the playoffs. Combine that with Vince Wilfork fingers in the face mask that luckily wasn't called, and it could turn out to be extremely damaging if a player gets ejected or if it draws a costly 15-yard penalty. Things like that will cause the Patriots to beat themselves, which in my opinion is the only way they can be beaten this season. Good points. Good points all, Mike. An excellent, excellent email. He says, don't give other teams any stupid opportunities to ruin this perfect season. Make them beat you with their play, not with your own loss of control. I really couldn't have said it any better myself. Those were a couple of examples that I agree with you, where, you know, guys like Harrison and Wilfork in particular lost a bit of their cool, got caught up in the heat of the moment, and were very, very lucky that they didn't do something that cost their team ultimately a victory. And, of course, that's what this entire Patriots team has been built on, is being able to keep its collective cool. And those were two instances in which I kind of thought that they did lose it a little bit. An excellent observation by you. Okay, let's see. This one, well, we don't have a name on this one. Guys, you gotta put the names on these emails. Oh, this is TG, says, in the land of optimistic Giant fans. TG says, how does the current coaching carousel affect the Patriots? How concerned are we with the big tuna in Miami? Rex Ryan, another expatriate coach, is going to go to the Raiders to the Jets. We're going to assume the AFC East will become more competitive. After this season, it could get much less competitive. We can't expect the Patriots to go 6-0 in their division again. The going will continue to get more and more difficult for the Patriots, and the more they continue to win, despite this fact, makes what they are doing all the more impressive, remarkable, even. Well, I don't think anybody's terribly concerned about it right now, to be honest with you, TG. I mean, you know, we talked a little about this when, you know, a week ago when we had Bill Parcells rejoin the AFC East at his VP of, you know, football ops position with the Dolphins. And now, of course, the story that Rex Ryan leaving the Raiders to come back east and go to the New York Jets and work for a guy that he's obviously very familiar with, and, Rob Ryan, with Eric Mangini, then, you know, quite frankly, guys that are familiar with each other, why shouldn't they try to help each other out? One guy's thinking, well, maybe my job's not entirely safe, so maybe I should, you know, make a move to a place that's a little bit more familiar in terms of a landing spot. And maybe if you put like minds together and you all hit it in one direction, maybe it's possible that you can do something. So what the Patriots are doing in the interim, yeah, I think it certainly bears talking about in terms of an impressive performance, knowing that the universe is going to get that much more difficult in which to compete. He says, I was fortunate enough to be at the Giants game, the best game I've ever attended. From Eli's bomb to Plexico to Vrabel's reception of the onside kick, the game was captivating. I never doubted that the offense could get the Patriots back into the game when they were down by 12. It was the defense I was concerned about, and I'm still concerned about going into the playoffs. I'll be right there with you, TG, on that one. I've always liked him, never sung his praises before, never said he is the best or anything like that, but I'm more impressed with Tom Brady than I've ever been. For a long time, you guys have been saying it's all about Brady, and you know what? You're right. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Good email, TG. Appreciate that. James, our friend in Roanoke Rapids. I keep hearing some saying that the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s were a much better team than the Patriots of this decade. Well, I thought I would compare both teams over an equal number of years during their prospective decades, and the results are below. Good old James. We can count on him to come through in the clutch, can't we? He sent me some charts here, and without too much detail, I can tell you that, let's see, he's got all of the Steelers records and what they did in the playoffs in the 1970s. And then he's got all of his Patriots records and what they did in the playoffs thus far in the 2000s. And says at the bottom, if you go by this comparison, then I say that the 71 through 77 Steelers did less with more than the 01 to 07 Patriots. Yeah, because you can only really compare the Patriots to 07. So you'd have to, rightfully, if you wanted to compare teams, you'd have to go with the Steelers just through 1977. Steelers were 6-8 in 71, 11-3 in 72, 10-4 in 73, 10-3 Super Bowl in 74, 12-2 in 75 Super Bowl, 10-4 in 76, 9-5 in 77. So they had two Super Bowls in that time. Patriots had three. Good comparison, James. That will be a timeless argument, and one that we'll continue to make as the Patriots have for success. If that, of course, is what they end up having, more success. This email comes from, let's see, what do we have here? It's a huge list, and I'm not sure who sent it. But this one says, odds against the Patriots. The quarterback with the most passing yards has never won the Super Bowl that season. Interesting. Says when being number one is not a good thing. This is an interesting little tidbit for those of you that might have missed it. You look at the quarterbacks who have led the entire NFL in passing yards for a single season, and no one has ever won a Super Bowl. Of course, Brady led the whole NFL with 4,806 yards passing this year. Last year it was Drew Brees, 44-18. They lost in the NFC Championship. In 05, it was Brady, who threw for 41-10. They lost in the division round. In 04, it was Dante Culpepper, the Vikings. He threw for 47-17, lost in the division round. Peyton Manning in 2003 with the Colts threw for 42-67, lost the AFC Championship. 2002, Rich Gannon with the Raiders threw for 46-89. They lost the Super Bowl. 2001, Kurt Warner and the Rams. He threw for 48-30, and of course we all know that Rams lost that Super Bowl to the Patriots. And in 2000, it was Manning again with the Colts. He threw for 44-13. Colts lost the wild card. Wow. In fact, let's see, you have to go back to 1984. Dan Marino, in his 5,000-yard season, the single best season of all time, and the Dolphins lost the Super Bowl. That was the only Super Bowl that Marino was in. Nobody else even reached a Super Bowl, much less won it. So Marino in 84, Warner in 2001, and Gannon in 2002. The only three quarterbacks who even reached the Super Bowl. Interesting, interesting stat. I had not seen this prior to this email. Well, whoever sent it, thank you. Our friend Pratt in Germantown, Maryland says, wow, what a season. I always thought that it was nearly impossible for a team to go 16-0, and the Pats have done it. Now the question arises, can this team win the Super Bowl? In my mind, this team will win the Super Bowl if they can get there. I'm still worried about the Colts and them being the team to ruin our season, but when I heard Teddy Bruschi and all the players comment that they know the real season begins now, I think this team is motivated to win against all odds and in front of the home crowd. I don't think anybody has forgotten the sting of losing to the Colts in the AFC Championship, and it will be fitting for the Patriots to play the Colts again. I'll say this, if we're up 21-6 at halftime over the Colts this year, the Colts can forget about it, no comeback this year. That's why I think the key for the Patriots is to win in the playoffs will be to score early, keep a lead over their opponents, instead of playing a comeback game. If they do this, I don't think any team can stop them, including the Colts. All right, some good early season or some early playoff thoughts there from our friend Pratt in Germantown, Maryland. Joseph sends this email from Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's interesting to me that of the five AFC teams in the playoffs, the Patriots have already beaten three of the five. If Cleveland had gotten in, they would have beaten four out of five. In the NFC, the Pats beat three out of the six playoff teams. Overall, that is six out of the other 11 playoff teams the Patriots have played and beaten. Seems like a lot to me. Any chance this is another meaningless record for the Patriots this year? It's a good point. I'm not sure that that is really a findable statistic, although I will tell you that when you do the side-by-side comparisons, Joe, with the 72 Dolphins, of course, that's the only other team that you can really compare the Patriots to at this stage of the game now because of the unbeaten record in the regular season. The Patriots played far tougher competition relative to who they played this year than the Dolphins did in 72. I think the Dolphins only played, and again, I'm sure someone will correct me, maybe our friend James can look this up. But I believe the Dolphins only played two playoff teams that entire year in going 14-0 in the regular season, whereas the Patriots have played six playoff teams in going 16-0. So, I mean, just shows me, tells me, Patriots played a far tougher schedule than the Dolphins did, comparatively speaking, back in 1972. Again, you can only play the games that are on your schedule because the NFL presets it, but I'm just saying, if you're going to have to make a comparison here, and you're comparing these two teams side by side, the Patriots certainly hold their own because they played, at least to this stage, to my knowledge, a tougher competition. Okay, oh, here we go. Pratt sends another one. He says, John, Happy New Year. Hope this year brings all Patriots fans a gift in a fourth Super Bowl championship. As for who this team is likely to face in 10 days, I think it will be the Jaguars. And I think this should be the team they should face. He says, reasons why the Jags are the team to face. Number one, Titans stand almost no chance against the Chargers. Steelers are a broken-down team that have already been beaten at home by this team. And three, this is a powerhouse AFC team that the Patriots have not faced this year. The third reason is my main reason for wanting this matchup, because I want all of the critics of the Patriots to see that they have played almost every powerhouse team in the NFL at some point this season and beaten them. This will also be an interesting weekend to see the Chargers going into Indy, where they have had some success against the Colts and have a decent chance to upset the defending champions. However, I think the Patriots are determined this year to finish the job and go 19-0 no matter who they face in the process. Listening to the comments of Mr. Kraft, Bruschi, Brady, etc., they all understand that a perfect regular season was not their goal. Their focus is still on the Super Bowl, and that sting of the loss last year to the Colts has not been forgotten. Okay, Pratt, good stuff. I would only argue, and you have great reasons here in the emails, and your reasons why the Jags would be the team to face. But I would argue that if the Jaguars don't get out of this weekend against Pittsburgh, well then, were they really a worthy enough opponent to play to begin with? See, I think that would be part of it. The teams that survive the opening test of the playoffs are more than worthy opponents. So reason number one, you say the Titans stand almost no chance against the Chargers. That may very well be. But if they pull the upset, don't the Titans deserve to be here? I mean, wouldn't they have earned their way here? Most definitely. I mean, I think we all realize everybody is 0-0. Everybody's 0-0 right now. So if you come in and you pull the upset, your team is firing on all cylinders, you deserve everything you're getting here. So I understand what you're saying. I tend to sort of agree with you here in terms of, think of the Jacksonville may end up being the team that will come to Foxborough in 10 days, but in all honesty, let the chips fall where they may. And if, it's somebody else other than the Jags, then, hey, so be it. They earned their way here. Okay, Dagmar in Miami says, first of all, Happy New Year to everybody. I think that out of the Titans, Steelers, and Jaguars, the Jaguars, they're the most dangerous team. Why? Because they have the most balanced team out of them. They have a good running game. They have a strong defense. They have two quarterbacks that can play at the same level. They know how to pressure the opponent's quarterback and take advantage of it. I think the Jaguars are a good team. It would be a good game if they faced the Pats. Once again, thanks again for everything you do to broadcast for us. Dagmar, thank you. Appreciate your listening. And I also appreciate your contributing to the show by sending your email. So thank you and keep them coming. Another vote for Jacksonville to be here in 10 days. It seems to be, again, Jacksonville is definitely the hot team in that respect, right? Overall, hot team. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today joins us in studio. B. Lowe, what's happening, kid?
What's going on, John? I am indeed in studio.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, John. Great to hear your voice.
Is it snowing there?
Last time I was outside, which was a couple hours ago, there were a handful, and I mean just a handful, of flurries. It didn't seem like it was amounting to anything, but the last 48 hours or so, we've gotten snow. I don't even know where you are. Where are you?
I'm in Syracuse.
Oh, well, there's got to be snow up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even have to ask that question, right?
How about 14 degrees in lake effect snow? Does that mean anything to you?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm aware of, what kind of elements those are, but
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's typical, upstate New York midwinter kind of stuff here.
Well, midwinter, early winter, late winter, spring, fall, right?
Yeah.
Except for the summer, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. So the question of the day has to do with, who do you think will end up being the opponent in 10 days and why, and who do you favor? Care to weigh in on that particular subject? Because everybody seems to think, at least at this stage of the game, that Jacksonville is going to be the team.
Well, I favor Tennessee if I'm the Patriots.
Well, see, that's what I was just thinking in one of the last emails. Why wouldn't you want to root for Tennessee?
Well, clearly, among the three options, Tennessee is the team you want to play, because I think that the gap between the first five teams and Tennessee is far wider than, say, the gap between the Patriots and Team 2 or Team 3. I think Tennessee is, you know, far and away the worst team in the playoffs right now, and I think there are some teams that didn't make the playoffs that are better than Tennessee. Tennessee doesn't scare me much at all. If I'm the Patriots, I'm rooting for an upset out in San Diego this weekend. I don't see that happening, but I think stranger things have happened because San Diego, if there's one thing that we know, and certainly we know it from last year, is that San Diego can do whatever they want in the regular season. They still have a lot to prove when it comes to the month of January. So, I wouldn't rule out that kind of upset. But, you know, realistically speaking, we're talking about the winner of the Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game. And, I do think that right now Jacksonville would prove to be the tougher opponent for a few reasons, and certainly that's part of the reason why I think Jacksonville will beat Pittsburgh. Actually, so I think they'd be a tougher opponent. I mean, Pittsburgh, reeling from the loss of Willie Parker, they've lost a couple of guys in their offensive line. I think including Max Starks, who's out now for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the Patriots did to them a couple weeks back. Maybe there is another Anthony Smith or someone, one of his teammates, who will give the Patriots the motivation they need this time around. We can't bet on that, though. I think Jacksonville is the toughest of the three possible opponents. Next in line would be Pittsburgh, and then Tennessee would be the most welcome opponent, I think.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree with you. Although at least when I started off with the conversation today, Brian, I thought that maybe Jacksonville would be the team, but I sort of favored Pittsburgh, and the reason that I favored Pittsburgh is because the Patriots have already whacked them once, and I think the Patriots would find a way, to be honest with you, because they've already played them. I think they would turn that around somewhat, psychologically and say that game means nothing. And that they would probably be on their best behavior if the Steelers were actually the team to come in and play.
Right. Well, I think the thing that is going to be hammered into the Patriots starting when they come back into work tomorrow morning is it's a new year. It's a new year, literally. It's 2008. It's not 2007. And whatever happened in the regular season, and this goes for every team, whatever happened in the regular season, throw it out the window. It's a brand new year. We're all 0-0. No team is ahead of any other team. We're starting from scratch. And I think that would include, in the case of Pittsburgh, since they're the only one of the three that the Patriots have played this year,
right,
it would be, do not even think about what happened on December 9th. It is meaningless. It's a different season. It's a different team. Forget about any of that. So I think that's the one element that's going to be hammered home more than anything else this week. And even some players from Saturday night alluded to the fact that they know what's coming to them. Sure, we get 4 days off. We know it's coming to us come Thursday. He's going to light into us saying that we didn't do anything in the regular season. So, the fact that they played Pittsburgh in the last, just within the last month, that could play a role. But how about for the Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game? They just played a couple weeks ago. Jacksonville beat them. Jacksonville beat Pittsburgh in the elements in Pittsburgh. They were
right,
big, I think. And then Pittsburgh, came back, made it a game, and Jacksonville prevailed. So I think when we look at that game, that's a real interesting storyline in that, can Jacksonville can Jacksonville pull off a win in Pittsburgh, a notorious tough team to play at home, twice within a month? And that makes it tough. But I think Jacksonville, they have a pretty well-balanced offense. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They've got a solid defense. I think they're a solid team. I don't think they can come up here and win. But I think that they have that they could provide a tougher opponent for the Patriots next week than Pittsburgh would.
Yeah, that's kind of why, personally, I'd root for Pittsburgh, as I suggest, only because I'm not sure that Tennessee is going to get by them.
Right.
I think Tennessee faces the tougher hill to climb coming in.
Now, the question with Tennessee is, do they give themselves a better chance to win if they have Kerry Collins at quarterback than Vince Young?
Yeah, see, I mean, I'm sure that there would be some people that would say yes, but frankly, if Vince Young is healthy, I don't know how that's the case. I mean, if he's really hobbling and that quadricep really isn't going to allow him to be Vince Young,
then I think Tennessee has little or no shot, to be honest with you.
And, yeah, you know, and he hasn't had a great year, and you know, there's a reason why Kerry Collins is a backup, obviously. If he was starter-worthy, he'd be the starter. But, you know, he does have, obviously, far more postseason experience and might not be fazed by the pressure of the postseason. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Tennessee can give them a game. Hey, that's another game that's a matchup, or excuse me, a rematch from just a couple weeks ago. It was a game that Tennessee blew. Had a lead against San Diego. San Diego came back, won, I'm pretty sure it was in overtime. So you've got that, you know, storyline as well with that game, a recent rematch. It's kind of the theme, it appears, for some of these, the two AFC wildcard games.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Webradio@patriots.com is, again, the email address. What do you say we rip through some emails here, B-Lo?
Yeah, I love it.
All right. Andy in Vermont says, very happy new year to you, John, Brian, all of Patriots Nation and Playbook listeners. Finally, 16-0 is here. What a way to finish 2007. I think it will be Jacksonville coming to Foxborough. The Steelers are without Parker. Davenport's okay, but I think the Jags will take it to them. But like you said, the Steelers are at home, so it's not an easy pick. And I don't think it matters who the Patriots play, especially to them. All these great numbers, 50 touchdowns Brady, 23 touchdowns Moss, 112 catches Welker, and the 589 points or whatever it was. There's only one number that matters now, and that's number three. Three more games, three more wins.
Yeah, I think ultimately from a talent standpoint, it doesn't matter who the Patriots play. I think they will beat whoever they play in that first round. And, you know, let's face it, we're not breaking any new ground here by saying that. I don't think that I think they will beat whichever team it is. It doesn't matter who the opponent is in that sense. I think they're going to beat whoever it is. But it does matter from a standpoint of where the Patriots' strengths, what are the opposing team's strengths. But we're all looking towards, the sexier matchup, which would be the following week if everything plays true to form with Indianapolis. But, it matters who they play, obviously. But I think that each of these three are beatable in this particular game.
Right. You know, the one thing that I did mention as well in the first hour of the program today, Brian, was, you know, I felt a little cheated by, you know, Indy, you know, kind of laying down and allowing Tennessee to beat them, and by the Cowboys laying down and letting Washington get into the NFC.
Yeah.
And so I asked a question, honestly, I don't know how we could fix it, but if anybody had any ideas on how, you know, we could, you know, fix this playoff system to where we wouldn't get games like this in the last week of the regular season to send a thought. And I got an email here from Owen in Belfast, Ireland, of all places today.
Yeah.
Great to hear from you, Owen. And Owen, I think, has come up with the solution, and I can't believe I didn't think of this, so I've got to give him all the credit here.
Let's hear it.
He says, in sports in Europe, in order to keep all games competitive, there's the threat of being relegated from one league into a lower league if you finish in the bottom three places. So if you're in a lower league and finish in the top three, you're promoted to the league above. It works very well as it means all games are important. Games between teams fighting for survival are really good to watch. However, I don't know if that would translate well to the NFL because there's no draft or salary caps in Europe and there are hundreds of teams. You know, the thought of relegation or you know, obviously couldn't happen here because we don't technically have a minor league unless you want to send them off now, you know, into, the Arena League or something because we don't have NFL Europe anymore. But the point was that you have to do something, I think, to keep the complete and total integrity of the game intact. And there's no way, regardless of teams having something to play for or not having something to play for, which is what Dallas and Indy were in this last year, because I opened up the program today talking about how admirable I thought the Giants' effort on Saturday night was.
Yeah,
I thought it was a stupendous game. I was really happy that the Patriots took the Giants' best shot and managed to come through. And I was very impressed with that shot the Giants gave. I don't think the Giants can play any better than they played on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And so because of that, Sunday's games, and particularly with the Colts and with the Cowboys, really paled by comparison. And they were a stark contrast to what, you know, 35 million people saw on Saturday night, you know? And so I'm trying to think, well, is there a way that we could fix that and make these teams play ball?
You know, it's hard to argue with the notion that a coach is going to do for his team whatever he feels is in the best interest of that team for the ultimate goal, which is making the playoffs. And once you've made the playoffs, be in whatever the perfect position is that you feel that is to advance in the playoffs. If Tony Dungy decides that the best course of action for his team to proceed into and through the playoffs is to have Peyton Manning play one half of that game and then rest and for his defensive players to maybe play a quarter or some of them play a half and then rest, if he feels that that is the best thing for his team, then he should do that. It's hard to argue with that notion, and I agree with you. It's a tough dilemma for the league, because not only does it make for the games to be have less quality to them, but it also affects teams that are sitting by and watching. The Tennessee-Indianapolis game affected more than just Tennessee and Indianapolis. Cleveland is sitting at home hoping that they get into the playoffs. The only way they can get into the playoffs is for the team that is not going all out to win the game. That puts them in a tough spot. Same thing with, I guess it was Minnesota, although Minnesota had already lost or was losing at the same time, so there were some different dynamics there. It's difficult for anyone, whether it be the commissioner, whether it be an owner of a team, to tell his coach to do something tactically that goes against what the coach feels is the best interest of the team to be prepared for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with relegation, I mean, that's a concept that is foreign to everyone here. And I'm not, you know, I'm aware of how it works a little bit. But, you know, for what would it take for Indianapolis to have the most incentive to go all out in that game? I don't know what that would be. An incentive that goes beyond, we want to be as fresh as possible for the playoffs. We want to be in perfect position to make a playoff run. There has to be a greater incentive than that. And I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know that that's an answer that we can really sufficiently come up with. But, you know, if there was a way to do some relegating.
Yeah, you know.
Certainly, I think the fear of failure would be as good a motivating factor as anything else.
But how does that affect Indianapolis on that game?
It really doesn't, unfortunately, because, you know.
Indianapolis isn't in fear of being relegated, whether they win or lose that game.
Yeah.
You know, unless, you know, I mean, the only.
Unless somehow you mandated and you said all your starters have to play. You know, or must play, you know, one half or something.
But how do you, you know, I mean, what if, now, you know, how do you tell a coach that? Now, what if the coach decides that, you know, from an X's and O's standpoint, this quote-unquote starter is not who I want in my game plan for the first half, you know, for the first half? Or, you know, I mean, it's hard to say that Peyton Manning isn't the guy you want down the stretch of a game that you need to win. But, you know, maybe Tony Dungy decides, you know what, Joseph Addai's skill set is different than Kenton Keith, and Kenton Keith is who we want in this game. He could make the case that, well, this is a game for Kenton Keith.
Yeah.
You know?
I suppose you could. I think you're stretching it there a little bit, but I see your point.
Yeah.
I see your point.
And I just, like I said, there needs to be a greater incentive than what is best for the team for the playoffs.
Agreed.
And until you come up with that incentive, I mean, maybe there is a total team incentive for total wins in the season. You know, maybe if the Indianapolis Colts as an organization had an opportunity, you know, if how many wins do they have? 14?
They ended
13-3, right? Because they lost. Maybe if, you know, every win that a team gets, the organization gets some league-wide incentive, whether it be monetary. I don't know. I don't know what that would be. I'm just trying to think out loud here, but it's hard for me to come up with what it would take to insist that a coach do something with his team that he doesn't feel is the right thing for his team.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to. So, you know, it's too bad. You know that Dallas could probably play a more complete game than they did against Washington. You know Indianapolis could play a more complete game than they did against Tennessee. But I can't argue with what those teams did on Sunday.
Right. John sends an email. He says, can it be considered a nitpick to complain that the game was so close I had chest pains? Getting aside, what a game. Credit where it's due. I never expected Eli to play that well. One of the magic elements of the Patriots is their unpredictability. They can throw so many different things at you that their opponents can't seem to anticipate them. My nitpick at this time is that it's starting to look like other teams are figuring them out. It was bound to happen, but it doesn't look like we're doing anything to change that. I'm concerned that these playoff teams who have no doubt been scouting us have a good read on us and we're not coming up with anything new. The weaknesses we have had, although few, are still weaknesses, and they're still there. We talk about them every week. If the fans can easily identify our weaknesses, well, so can a well-scouted coaching staff. The Pats coaching staff needs to rewrite a few things and give us that new car smell once again. We need to be the perfect storm that nobody is ready for.
You know, I mean, sure, there are some weaknesses, and we can point to a few on defense. If figuring out the Patriots is allowing a 65-yard, essentially game-changing touchdown in the fourth quarter, then figure us out all you want. You know, I mean, yes, they've had tighter games in the month of December, or more tighter games in the month of December than they had in September, October, November combined. But they're still obviously winning these games. They are coming from behind. They are winning with clutch play in the fourth quarter, even if they are, you know, if they are behind. Teams might be figuring out a little bit here, a little bit there. But ultimately, it's the Patriots who are coming through in the fourth quarter. It's the Patriots who are solving the other team in the fourth quarter. And, you know, if this is the definition of a blueprint, or I forget which player it was that said, I think it was Rodney Harrison a couple weeks ago after the Philadelphia game, if that's the blueprint, then keep printing off the blueprints. I mean,
right.
we the Patriots picked off A.J. Feely three times in that game against Philadelphia. Well, if that's the blueprint, then they'd be happy with getting three interceptions against the opposing team every week. That's going to put them in better position to win. Yeah, that was a close game, and Philadelphia maybe played its best game of the year, and maybe the Giants played their best game of the year. But ultimately, it's the Patriots who are coming through at the end against whichever opponent it is, whatever the quality of the opponent is. So, I don't know if teams are figuring them out just as much as if it's hard to go if it's nearly impossible to go 16-0 through a regular season, it's even more impossible to go 16-0 with 16 blowouts. So the Patriots instead went 16-0 with about 10 blowouts and six close games.
Right.
I think they'll take that, and if they have close games in the playoffs, I think they're comfortable and confident in the way that they play in tight games, that even if a team has figured them out, quote unquote, through three quarters, they will return the favor and figure out the opposing team in the final quarter.
Right. Jordan says he's a lifelong Pats fan living in Savannah, Georgia. I think Jacksonville will beat Pittsburgh and then come to Foxborough and then get beat up. We call them physical, but against who, I ask? Certainly not against the Colts this year. We have all witnessed during the course of 2007 regular season the Patriots have an intensity switch. That's playoff football. Remember all the worries about the Colts defense last year before the playoffs, and then once they started it, well, it seemed to be two different teams. We have the opportunity this year to watch history in the making, and it has felt that way. The playoffs are competed on another level. The Pats this decade have been the only team to year after year pick up their level of play in the second season. It's actually a good point.
Yeah, it is a good point, and we can point to specifically the years that they've had a bye. Clearly, the bye week helps any team, but it has helped the Patriots. When they've had the bye week, they steamroll through the playoffs. When they don't have a bye week, they lose in either the second or third round. So that certainly helps. I don't know if 2 years ago when they destroyed Jacksonville but then lost to Denver, if everyone would say that they peaked around the playoffs. But I understand the point, and it's a good point. And that's what you want to do, and that's kind of how they they don't fret when they go into if they have some players banged up in the middle of the season, or if they go through some trying times or lose a game or two here or there, they don't fret because what they work towards is peaking around this time of year. And that's sort of the game plan. This isn't a team that is, just happy to be there when they're playing in January. Mm-hmm. The bare minimum is playing in January. So they design their master schedule, if you will, of the entire season based upon playing in January. I'm sure the coaching staff has a master plan when it comes to, once they get into November and December, the practice schedule, making sure that they're still going to be fresh down the stretch and into the playoffs. They have that built in, the fact that they're going to be playing in January, and they keep that in mind, and that's why they try to, they try to peak at this time of year and be at their peak performance practice wise and playing wise at this time of year. And so I don't think it's a surprise that they're playing well at this time of year.
Right. Jack sends this one for Sportsman of the Year. He says, Brett Favre, what do you think about this? Am I just being a Pats fan that I find this wrong? I look at it this way. If the award was going to a golfer, but they gave the award not to Tiger Woods, but to the fourth ranked guy, would that make sense?
Well, it's a good point. How about a guy like Roger Federer? Didn't he have a pretty good year?
Oh, he had a pretty good year.
I was taken aback by Brett Favre. And I read the story, and it was a good story, and he does a lot. He's gone through a lot on the field, off the field. And I don't know, I've never seen in writing exactly what the qualifications are for Sportsman of the Year. I didn't think that he was a candidate. He never crossed my mind as
I don't know that there's a specific, set of criteria other than the fact that you happen to be a good story,
right,
and you have to be an athlete who's clearly excelling and at the top of your game. And I don't really have a tremendous problem with Favre, although I have to admit that it's a bit of a surprise based on the season alone. But I also tend to think that there are still some, and maybe in this particular instance that's one of the cases, some that think that this is Favre's last year, so this might be a thank you pat on the back to Brett thing.
Yeah. And hey, Brady has the Sporting News Player of the Year.
That's true.
He won that.
Yes,
and
he does.
And he won Sports Illustrated, 2 years ago? So.
Yeah.
I'm not sympathetic towards Brady in this particular instance. I'm okay with, it's not a, I don't, put it this way, I don't feel it's a travesty that Brady
you can only win so much,
and, becoming having the greatest season a quarterback has ever had, and leading the greatest team regular season that has ever been seen, I think Brady's okay with being right at that point at this stage of his career.
Right. John says, I'm a huge Rodney fan, and I was surprised that he lost his cool on that late penalty. The Wilfork one was awful, but what was worse was the announcers claiming he was trying to poke an eye out. What, did they have the Three Stooges marathon on in the booth?
Well, he was... I think he did put the fingers through the helmet. I mean, it was
he did. And honestly, I had an emailer in the opening hour of the show, Brian, basically say that talk about that a little bit. And I happen to agree with the email is the fact that that was a little uncharacteristic, especially from guys like even Harrison, who we know can be hot at times, but especially Wilford, to lose their cool. And they were very lucky that they did not get penalized further.
Yeah, there's. It was a chippy game. The word dirty was thrown around by a few players. What's interesting about it is you remember the playoff game in Denver 2 years ago? Logan Mankins got ejected from that game. It was right around halftime for something that happened at the bottom of a pile, and it was far less. I don't remember if there was a great camera angle of it, because what happens is defensive lineman, offensive lineman, the bottom of a pile, a running back. You never know what happens. But it was egregious enough that Logan Mankins got ejected. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
What Wilfork did, it was sort of after the play. It appeared to be intentional. I mean, it appeared he put his fingers through the helmet. I guess it wouldn't have been a stunner. It wouldn't have been a stunner if they did choose to eject him. I guess. I mean, it was, I don't know what's ultimately going to happen as far as a fine. I don't expect there to be a suspension. But, you got to be careful with those kinds of things. You're only putting your team in a bad position if you egregiously, cause a penalty after a play like that. But there was stuff going on in both teams. Don't get me wrong. I think there was the referees had their hands full with some of these guys.
They definitely did. Patriots, I think, just had the most visible and maybe the most egregious ones.
They did.
Scott in Washington, D.C., I'm actually a little more interested in which team is best suited to beat Indy in Indy than I am in which team will end up coming to New England on the 12th. Of all the AFC teams, I worry most about the Colts, so I'd love to see them knocked off. I will root this weekend for whichever team to win that is best suited to that big task. So is it San Diego, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh? The latter two obviously would require the Titans winning, which I'll root for. The view is that Jacksonville or Pittsburgh would be better suited to upset Indy than San Diego would. What do you think?
That's a great question, because if you're like me and you feel pretty confident that the Patriots will be able to win their game here against whichever of the three opponents, then you start to think about the potential matchup of the next week. I that's a great point. Who would be most suited to beating Indy in India? That's a great question.
I think, personally, my own thought is San Diego. I think San Diego's got all the offensive elements to give Indy's defense some trouble. I think San Diego has enough on defense to be able to keep up with Indy's offense.
Yeah, and, you know, they had that game, that odd game, the week after the Patriots played Indy, that game against the Indy-San Diego game that San Diego won through, you know, the help of Adam Vinatieri and others, and Peyton Manning, who had six interceptions. Antonio Cromartie, you know, Manning might still be having nightmares of Antonio Cromartie and maybe will going into that game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think San Diego is a worthwhile foe. You know, it's hard to imagine San Diego, based on their history, winning two straight playoff games, though. And you know, if they do win this weekend, going into Indy is a tough – well, listen, going into Indy will be tough for any team, just like coming into Foxborough will be. I don't think Pittsburgh, if they get by Jacksonville, would have any hope in Indy. And I think Jacksonville would have a tough time, too. I would have to say that San Diego would probably give Indy its best game, but I don't know if I'm too too confident they go in there and win. I think they could give them the best game because they have the best talent probably among these teams.
Yeah.
And they've beaten Indy already this year, and you know, it'll be different elements obviously being in the dome.
Right.
But I would say it's a tough task. It's a tough task for whichever team it is going in there, and a lot of it depends too on you know, where Indy's at with some of their injuries you know, we've seen what's happened with them in the past when they have sort of coasted through those last couple weeks. Actually, the you know, when they lost to San Diego to end their perfect season a couple of years ago, you know, they lost to Pittsburgh in the first round of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some different factors there with Indy. I personally think it's all going to come down to an Indy New England matchup a couple weeks from now, but that's why they play.
That's why they play. Barry in Clearwater, Florida. Patriots are probably going to go 19-0, but the AFC is strong, and my guess is, unlike the NFC, anyone in the AFC could beat the Patriots on any given day. They'll have to play their best each day. The four close games are probably good for the Patriots because they need to be humble, and my guess is they will be confident but humble. They are not invincible. I'm sure they know this, and when Coach Belichick promotes the other teams as being good, well, he's not kidding. Or he's not just making stuff up to motivate them. We have a great chance, though. By the way, Barry says, I used to sell peanuts and programs in the 60s at the games. Actually worked with Chuck Sullivan under the kid selling. His dad was Billy Sullivan, the owner of the Pats at the time, but he worked too. How about that?
Wow. That's a great anecdote.
Used to work with Chuck Sullivan.
Going a little far back in the past. You're
I suppose.
Showing his age.
We're all thrilled, and we're terribly excited.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
John sent another email here. He says, the trivia, the recap, and he says, John, I sent you this last week. You answered all the questions, so now let's see how we did, or how you did anyway. He says, all right, Pats will beat the Giants. We answered yes, or I answered yes. Brady will break Manning's record. I answered yes. Moss will break Rice's record. Yes. Rucker will break Troy Brown's record. Yes. Rodney will sack Eli. No. Seymour will sack Eli. No. Ty Warren will sack Eli. Well, he didn't leave an answer here, but that did not happen. Did it?
No.
I don't think so.
No one sacked
Eli. A-Train will sack Eli. Yes. Vrabel will sack Eli. No answer. Broadcast team will bring up Spygate. Yes. Matt White will leg whip someone. No. Stallworth will get a ball thrown to him. Yes. Asante will pick off Eli. No. Rodney will pick off Eli. No. Will be a kick or punt return for a touchdown. Yes, but not exactly how I wanted it.
Yeah.
Eli will further develop that what, who, when look on his face like his brother.
So
no, he was very
here?
Good.
So how long are we going here?
Peyton will cry when Brady breaks his record. Who knows? Eli will cry because that's what he does. No. All right. Well, so we did a fair job with those predictions, I thought.
Not bad. Not bad. You know, all the records you nailed. And then, you know, as far as the sacks, only Adalys Thomas had a sack of Manning.
Exactly.
And only Ellis Hobbs had an interception. So, you know, it was hard to predict those, I guess. I don't know.
Kind of hard to predict those, but we had some fun with it anyway. Maybe we'll give another go at it this time next week when we know who we're going to play.
Sure, that would be great.
You know, yeah. What do we got on Patriots today, big fella?
Well, we are. You know, it's kind of a tweener day here as we await the team's return tomorrow. Still waiting on the next opponent, but sort of talking about getting some player perspective on. You know, cleaning, you know, a clean slate going into the postseason, but on the other hand, you know, with Ellis Hobbs and others saying, you know, the Patriots team is still the target for any team. They won't forget that the Patriots went undefeated. Teams in the playoffs won't forget that, you know, they could knock off an undefeated team. The players expecting that they're still going to have that target as they get into the playoffs here. And, you know, still talking a little bit about that epic game against the Giants. So a lot still to cover and a lot more to go through the week. And we'll see what the players have to say tomorrow when they come back into work.
Good stuff. That's right. They're off through today and back to the business at hand starting tomorrow. So.
Exactly. And then, you know, Monday they'll come on in the morning, and I'm sure the coaches will have the game plan all prepared for whichever team it is that they're playing.
Absolutely. All right. We'll catch up with you at the stadium next week.
Excellent. I'll be here.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
Brian Lowe, Patriots Today. Of course, you can get the program right here on Patriots.com. We're going to wrap up the program today just because it was such an extraordinary event that transpired on Saturday night, what with the television coverage and the three networks and all of the records being set. We wanted you to relive some of the moment. You've probably heard a little bit of this before, but just for austerity's sake here, we want to take you back inside the Patriots locker room after the game on Saturday night against the Giants and the 38-35 win, let you hear not only from Bill Belichick, but also from Tom Brady and Randy Moss in their post-game comments. Because, again, so many different records as we opened up the show talking about today, so many records that were set, so many extraordinary performances along the way, and, of course, the ultimate extraordinary performance was the 16-0 mark to wrap up the regular season, which now leaves the Patriots in a position that no other team has ever been in before with a chance to go 19-0 if they can win out and get through the Super Bowl. So a lot of work still to do, but extraordinary nevertheless to get to where they are right now waiting to open up the playoffs in 10 days. Tomorrow we'll be back with you, same Pats time, same Pats channel. I think tomorrow, if my calendar is correct, tomorrow is Thursday, right? So that means I'll be in Milwaukee tomorrow, but I will be with you right here inside Patriots Playbook. So let's hear from the coach, Tom Brady, Randy Moss, in the aftermath of a huge win over the Giants coming up this past Saturday.
Well, that was some way to finish the season tonight, but you know, it's really exciting to be a part of this football team and what these guys did today. I think all the credit goes to the players. They stepped up. They made a lot of outstanding plays at critical times in the game, especially there in the second half and fourth quarter. And you know, they came through like they have all year. So it's a great feeling. You know, now's the time to kind of take a day or two and I think appreciate what this team has done, but at the same time, looking forward, you know, we've got our biggest game of the year coming up, and we're going to have to be ready for that. Yeah, I don't know who it's going to be against, but that team will be a good football team, whoever it is. But in the meantime, you know, we're going to take a little bit of time to enjoy this one and you know, feel good about what we accomplished. But, again, we need to – pretty soon we're going to need to turn the page and move on. But it's happy for the players to win, and – you know, I know we set a lot of individual records and so forth and so on. So without getting into all those individually, I also want to congratulate those players for their individual accomplishments or collective accomplishments in some cases. So, but Giants are a good football team. They're headed to the playoffs as well as they should be. And, you know, I'm sure they'll do a good job. They got a good football team. They're well coached. And they certainly gave us all we could handle tonight.
Reaction to say, I'm on.
I just gave it. So I'm happy. It's you know, you work all year to try to win every game, be able to win them all is great, and I'm very happy about it.
Can you talk about the sequence? You know, the back-to-back plays. Randy had the guy beat, dropped the ball, and then you came back with the exact same play.
Yeah, we had a play-action pass and. You know, it was Randy was out there past the safety. The ball's a little bit underthrown. He came back and couldn't quite handle it. Then the next play, they went to a trap type of defense where the corner came up and trapped, and the safety went over the top. And Randy outran him, and Tom put it out there. It was a great throw.
Is it the same play?
No,
play.
Not even close.
Okay.
No. First play is a play action pass.
But as far as the route, though, I mean?
No.
Coach, all season the players have been saying that this isn't a perfect team. How do you reply to that now? I mean,
well, I don't think that was our best football game out there today. I think there's a lot of things we could do better. And start with me. I think we need to You know, we could do a better job all the way across the board. Giants are a good football team, don't get me wrong, but there are things we just, you know, we need to do a better job of, and hopefully the next time we'll play, we'll have some of those things improved.
Bill, can you explain
the place you kind of grew up as a coach, doing what you just did at the time of winding down?
I think there's a little, again, Giants Stadium's always been a special place for me. 12 years here, and they were 12 great years of the Giants. So we had some great seasons, championship seasons, and some of the units that I was involved with, special teams, defense, were, I think were very productive. And it was a thrill to be a part of some of those units as well. So, you know, it's always special to come back here into Giants Stadium. The fact that what happened today was here, I don't have any complaints about it, let's put it that way.
Coach, you faced your largest deficit of the season. We're able to rally on the level of experience. What do you think kind of catapulted the team to that 65-yard touchdown play?
Well, our team is, we've been behind before, and these guys just, as a football team, have made plays when they need to make them, whether it's recovering onside kick, whether it was a punt return in the Indianapolis game, whether it's a stop on defense, a score on offense, Steve's field goals today. Everybody's come through at one time or another for us this season, and that was true today. It certainly wasn't perfect. There were a lot of things that weren't all that good. Giants made a lot of plays on us, but fortunately we made just a few more than they did. And again, all the credit goes to the players. They're the ones who made them. They made them under pressure. They made them when there was little margin for error. You know, Els's interception, a couple scores there on defense, on offense, and finally covered the kicks a little bit better. So, you know, that when we had to make them, we made them.
And I wanted to know.
I think the players are happy. They should be. They've worked hard. It's what they've done is, it's good. They should be happy about it for a little while. But we've got to move on. We've got another big game coming up, and we're going to have to turn the page. But for right now, now's a great time to feel good about today and the regular season.
Bill, can you explain at all why this team was able to do something that's never been done before?
No, I can't analyze every team in every season. I can just tell you that these guys work hard. They take a lot of pride in their job. And in the end, they're able to make the plays in critical situations to win games when they had to. And they deserve credit for that. They're the ones that made them.
Could you talk about pass protection today?
It was tough. It was tough. The Giants have a great pass rush. Individually, they can rush the passer, and then, of course, when they bring their scheme blitzes, that puts a lot of pressure on your front, too. It's not just the linemen, but the tight ends and the backs and the receiver adjustments and all that. So, the lines did a good job, as they have all year, and the tight ends and the backs did a pretty good job in their pickup and the receivers in terms of getting their routes adjusted so they were open quick enough so Tom could get rid of the ball. So it's... passing's a team concept, and to be able to handle the pressure in the pass rush, it's all got to work together, and for the most part, it did tonight.
Explanation on that, on the unsportsmanlike call?
It was meaningless in terms of nobody had any stake. Everybody's situation was settled, but this game was played at a pitch that was amazing.
I don't think it's a whole lot different than the way the game was played in Tennessee last year. We played the same kind of game. I know Tennessee's playoffs were riding on that, but I'll go back to something that the coach that I work for used to say, and I certainly believe every word of it. What Bill said was the only meaningless game. There's no meaningless games when you're playing in them. And when we're playing in a game, it means something to us. And I know it meant something to the Giants, too. So it might not mean anything to you, or it might not mean anything to the standings. But if you're playing in it, you're a competitor, it means something to you. And I think that was reflected out on the field today.
Bill, what was the explanation on the unsportsmanlike call against Moss? And then did you say anything to him about that?
The explanation was that it was there were two people involved in a celebration. I couldn't see it. There was too many people in front of me.
Bill, do you think this accomplishment is even more special given the salary cap here right now?
I don't know.
Kind of designed to keep the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I can evaluate that. All I know is that I'm proud of what our team did. I'm happy for the players, and that's really where I'm at. I can't make comparison with some other year or team or league or whatever.
Bill,
No, you touched upon the individual records there. How difficult was it to see both Tom and Randy get their record? It would prove to be the winning score in the 16th win.
Well, again, I'm happy for all the players that got them. I know there were several of them. I'm not sure what even they all were, but whatever they were, I'm happy they got them, and the players certainly deserve them. You know, we've had play 16-game regular season schedule. There were a lot of productive plays along the way, and the fact that that they added up to be record-breaking plays and all is great, and I'm happy for those players. But I'm more happy for the team, that what the team accomplished, and whatever records fell along the way, you know, great. Whichever ones didn't, that's okay, too. What the team accomplishes, this is a little special.
Bill, did any people from your life flash through your mind as the time's ticking down and you realize this thing's going to happen, whether it be players?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, Charlie was on the sideline. I was glad to be able to go over and hug Charlie going back to the last game in 04. So glad he was there. You know, he's another guy that has great ties to the Giants and the Patriots, and I was with them both places. So.
Bill, you took a chance at bringing Randy Moss in here. Now that we've gone through the regular season and everything he added to the team, what is just the difference he made to this offense?
Well, Randy's an outstanding player. I don't think it was a chance. I don't think it was a chance at all. I think it was a chance to improve our team. That's why we did it. And Randy's a tremendous player. He's a great leader, and he's strong in every phase of the game. Okay. All right. Thank you.
I would have made a better throw on the previous one. Just didn't get enough on it. But it was a third down play, and it was 3rd and 10, and he had a 9 route, which is just a go. And they had blitzed us on the play, so it's tough on him when Randy does that with the technique, the corner plays. So I tried to throw it as far as I could, and doesn't get any better than that.
Obviously, the win is the most important play aside, though, on the Tom. Considering the flair for the dramatic that you guys broke 2 records with that play after the miss, there's something that adds a little bit more specialness to that.
I think what I'm most proud of is playing a playoff team on the road, and they were playing extremely hard and down however many were, 11 at one point or 10 at one point, and finding a way to come back and win. We did the same thing at Dallas this year, did the same thing in Indy this year, and been in some tough games. At Baltimore, we were down quite a bit, and we really rallied back and showed some mental toughness and some character, and it's going to hopefully prepare us for what we're going to face next month. So everyone's going to enjoy this one. This happens once every 35 years, so Let's celebrate for a couple of days and get ready to go back to work.
How has this whole thing been mental for you guys?
Well, I think Coach has kept us pretty grounded, so he's not so concerned with records and stuff like that. He's most concerned with us putting our best out there each week, and the veterans have responded and brought some of the younger guys along, and they play well, and it's really been a group team type effort. And some days offense has played really well, and some days the defense has really played well, and I'm just glad we did enough today to win. Mike getting the ball there at the end on the onside kick, I was standing right there, and I was pretty excited for a regular season game.
Once you guys knew that you had 16-0, you'd done it, you had the record, did you say anything to any of your teammates? Did they say anything to you in those last couple of seconds?
Well, not really. We've been dealing with being undefeated all season, so it's kind of a tricky game because it really doesn't mean that much, but it means a lot. And the players, I thought, approached it really well. We practiced this week and prepared to play a game and play a very difficult game. So, like I said, I'm proud of the way that we responded there in the second half. I thought the Giants played really well. We certainly didn't play our best in the first half. We had too many trips to the red zone and didn't score touchdowns, but we made the plays when we needed to.
Tom, in your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine that you could throw 50 touchdown passes in a season? And at what point did you start to think this year that the number was within reach?
It's a God's honest truth. I never thought about it or tried to, you know, play any differently than what I've always tried to do, which is try to find the open guy and throw him the ball. And Josh McDaniels has done a great job and obviously the way the receivers have played, the way the offensive lines protect. I mean, we've had been sacked so few times with as many times as we throw the ball, and it's because the receivers get open, and it's because the line protects well, and we're running the ball better now. So just proud of the way we played, like I said, and more so than any individual record, which to me is it's just not as important as what I've experienced in the past 7 years and what I've experienced tonight. So I love scoring 50 touchdowns, throwing 50, because that means we scored 50 times. And we scored a bunch of other touchdowns to break other scoring records, which is pretty cool for the offense to share in that. And the defense, too, because that plays a lot of credit to the defense, of the way they're getting us the football. So those are all team achievements, and just excited to be part of them. It's been a great team to play for. It's been a lot of fun.
Who gets the record setting? Well, you or Randy? Are you going to cut it in half?
Good question. Highest bidder, I guess. Actually, he got his hands on it, so it's his. You know, to tell you the truth, I got a jersey, and I got a lot of memories stored up here. So,
there's been so much talk about the record, 16-0, and all that. Is it kind of a relief now to finally have it now?
I think it's a relief that you play a regular season and you finish, and now we're getting ready for what we've been preparing for all season. So I think to have the week off is extremely important for us to rest, and a little bit of pressure is relieved, at least for this week. And then coach is going to turn up the pressure on Thursday when we go back. So it's a bit of relief in the sense that, you know, we have a week off, and we can rest our body a little bit, so we need it.
You always said you had bigger fish to fry, and what happens if you don't win the Super Bowl? What will 16-0 mean at that point if you don't win the Super Bowl?
Got to win the divisional game first, so I just hope we play our best in a couple weeks. So and we've winning three Super Bowls, we know that's the goal every year, and it has been disappointing the last couple years, coming up short last year in Indy, and the team responded well to come back this season and really try to put our best out there. So it should be an exciting game in a couple weeks. And I hope we play better than we played tonight, because we're going to play best teams out there, which is whoever gets in, it's going to be very challenging in the AFC.
Can you play like Tom. You did tonight? Can you win a playoff game like you played like you did tonight for most of the night?
I hope we can play better. I hope we can score more in the red area instead of kicking a bunch of field goals. But like at the same time, I thought we responded when we needed to. I thought the defense came up with some big plays. Ellis's interception was hugely important tonight, and we'll see if we can put together some more momentum here in the next couple weeks.
Three final wins, fourth quarter, third quarter, down two scores. Is there something that you do, like say a free throw shooter might do the same thing to alleviate the pressure? Because you played your best when you really hadn't played maybe your best earlier in the game. Is there a personal thing that you do?
There's always pressure. There's pressure every time you're out there on the field. Every time you touch the ball, there's pressure. There's pressure to the receivers to get open and the offensive line to protect. And I think we just made the plays, and we didn't make them earlier in the game. And as in the scoring area, we had some great drives that ended in field goals, unfortunately. But I'm proud of the fact we didn't turn the ball over and didn't get them short field. They were playing extremely well tonight. So.
But some guys don't play their best at the end of a game where the pressure is really on. You've done it now. It's really three. There's been a lot's happened this year, but this has happened three times.
All the guys have stepped up. Randy steps up. Jabbar stepped up in Baltimore. West had some huge third down catches tonight. And offensive line protected West, one of the best defensive lines in the league. So, you know, it was pressure by everybody. It was pressure on the coach to call the right play. And, you know, my job's just to try to figure out what the hell's going on out there and throw it to the guy who's most open.
Tom, from the back's perspective, what's it like to play with Randy?
It's terrible. I'll tell you, it's awful. He's the best, so he makes it easy on me. So have a good night, guys. Thank you.
Well, the first play, you know, was kind of the ball was underthrown a little bit, and I tried my best to come back and get it because I knew it was I don't know if it was cornerback or safety, but I seen one guy fall. So then I knew it was my chance to try to get that catch and move the offense a little further to the end zone. But I missed the ball and, you know, jogged back to the huddle, and very next play, they called a play that was really designed, you know, for Wes Welker to go out and get the first down. But the corner and the safety trapped Wes and tried to trap Tommy into throwing the ball there to get the ball picked off. But Tommy made a good read. All 11 guys, you know, executed the play, and I think that's really what jump started the second half. I don't really know what was going in my head. Really, I had to really, it was really a nine route, and what I had to do was just clear out to try to get Wes Welker the ball for the first down, like I said. But you know, they both trapped the corner and the safety, trapped Wes, and tried to trap Tommy into throwing that ball, and Tommy made a good read. Like I say, all 11 guys executed, and, you know, the play was finished, luckily for six, and like I say, I think that's what jump-started the second half.
Randy, this player's season vindication for a lot of people were questioning whether or not he's the news after what happened in the past. How special is it for you, Rachel Rice's record, and what this team has done this year?
I don't really think that me breaking Jerry Rice's record was special. I think shutting you guys up is really what made it special. All the negativity and all my critics. I think that's really, you know, a good feeling to be able to come in and have a good season like this, to have confidence in myself that I can still get it done. And I really wasn't really coming into the season not thinking that I was coming out here going to have a good season. You know, my mindset was to come out here and have a hell of a season. Now, what the numbers were, I didn't really know. I just wanted to come up and play some good football this year, knowing it was my 10th year in the league. So good things happen, and you see what happened.
Man, how about being part of a historical season like this?
Well, I think the only thing that we can do with it being historical season is really enjoy it for 24, no more than 48 hours. We have a tough game, second round of the playoffs. There's no telling who we're going to play. But, you know, it's the playoffs, and anything can happen. It's really one game at a time, and if you lose, you're out. So, like I said, I think we can really enjoy this for what we've accomplished as a whole unit, no more than 48 hours, and then we get down to the nitty-gritty and get ready for the playoffs.
The record four, you're going to cut it in half, give Tom half. You know, it's record two.
To be honest, I suggested that. I really did. I really suggested that, and, you know, Tommy was telling me, "Nah, you keep it." And I was like, "Well, we both did it. Let's, you know, I give my kids one half, and you give your son the other half." So I really don't know what we're going to do with the ball. I'm very blessed and fortunate to be in this position, to be able to go out and do what I love to do, and that's play football. You know, there's certain things in life that, you know, you don't want to pass up, and this was an opportunity that I didn't want to pass up, becoming a New England Patriot man and playing some real heads-up championship-caliber football, not toward the end of the season, at the beginning, the middle, and the end. So now that the regular season's over, hopefully we can continue, but at the same time pick up the pace a little bit.
What, Randy, because of your team's record-breaking season, you guys are getting worldwide attention, not just national attention. For example, we are here from Japan.
Okay.
What do you think of all that?
I've never been in that situation to know that we're worldwide, man, but it's a good feeling knowing that, you know, not just this country, but the whole world, the whole globe, and that's a good thing, man, so I appreciate that.
Japan, they're all talking about.
Well, I can't speak that language, buddy, but just tell them we said what's up, man, and we appreciate the support. That's all.
Randy, what makes Brady so special, and when did you sense, because you know, injured a little bit for most of training camp, when did you sense you could have this kind of year?
To be honest with you, the first day I came to New England and took my physical.
Because
I knew what they had here. You know, the coaching staff, Coach Belichick, the guys, the locker room, the success they've had over the years. So I've basically done my homework on why I wanted to become a New England Patriot. And, you know, I, like I told you, I love what I do. And, you know, it might not seem, you know, off the field talking on the microphones that, you know, I don't carry myself as a professional. But when it comes in between those white lines, man, I love what I do. And I love playing professional football. So for me to be able to come in and look down the road. I mean, I know it's kind of hard to believe, but I kind of predicted this.
Randy, you said a touchdown celebration. The first one was more flamboyant than splitting the defense. Why so on that moment?
Well, in my whole career, I don't dance, but one thing we wanted to do, try to put a little fun. So each week we're going to come up with a new dance. This week was the Tootsie Roll. So ain't no telling for the next week, and kind of got in trouble a little bit by coach, but I hope he looked past that a little bit. But like I said, man, we're just trying to have fun. You know, we are grown mans, but we're still big kids at heart because of what we do. But like I said, I love the game. You know, for us to come out here 16-0, for us to go 0-16, no matter what happens, man, I've always loved the game of football. And to be able to be 30 years old, 10 years in this league, man, to be able to accomplish this, and I'm not talking about any individual awards, just 16-0, man, from a team standpoint, man, that's phenomenal. And it's something that, you know, hopefully, you know, records are meant to be broken, man, but it's something that we can hang our hat on for now and enjoy it.
Randy, you've had three of these kinds of games. We needed two scores in the second half, fourth quarter. What is it about, and Tom really has played maybe his best game, but what is it about him in crunch time? What do you notice about him during some key moments of game, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 15? What is it about him?
I think that killer instinct that he has. And you got to really give credit to his mom and dad. You know, I haven't really been around a lot of guys, you know, such as Tom Brady. You know, when it comes to that killer instinct, I've been around really one quarterback that really showed that really killer instinct, and that was Culpepper. And, you know, for Tommy to be able to, you know, to show his killer instincts in any type of situation, I don't care if we're winning, if we're down, you know, you get sacked, 3rd and long, whatever it may be, Tommy still thinks in his mind that we're going to get it. And that's something that you would want in a leader, and you know, we look up to him to lead us down that field at any given time, and he's done that so far.
Is there ever any doubt you guys are going to go down?
No, really. The Giants came out. They came out with some great intensity to start the game, and you know, that's what Coach Belichick preached all week about. You know, how they were going to come out. And you know, it took us a while to be able to match their intensity, but you know, being down 12 in the second half, it was just a matter of time for something to happen to jumpstart I call it a party. And you see, we start partying out there, man. So you know, hats off to us. You know, I know a lot of people didn't really think that we were going to do it, and a lot of people didn't want us to do it. But in this game of football, man, it's hard to go 16-0, man. So as a football player and as a fan of the game, and my hat's off to this organization. Thank you.